Pretty obvious that Rabbi Jacobson is not able to make it today. So,
Rabbi Jacobson, you have to change.
So, I was asked to speak about the Sikh of Chav Ches Nissen, which many people are familiar with. I assume, I hope, which never spoke in very strong terms about the importance of doing everything in our power to bring about the coming of Mashiach. In fact, the most famous expression from the Sikha is Asuk Chol Asher B'Chol Techem, to do everything in your power. The Rebbe says, I've done everything that I could do, and I now give it over to you. The only thing I can do is give it over to you. Do everything in your power to bring Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Peil Mamash. But if we analyze some of the statements that the Rebbe made, obviously it requires further analysis. I mean, in general, we have to understand what does it mean that the Rebbe has done everything in his power, and therefore it's up to us. And of course, before we get into any of the other points that the Rebbe brings up, the obvious question that most people have, whether it's spoken or unspoken, is, okay, very good. If the Rebbe did everything in his power, and now it's up to me, what does the Rebbe expect me to do? And who am I that I'm going to be the one? What is it that I'm going to do? And who am I that I'm going to be the one that's going to make it happen? That by me doing everything in my power, what power do I have? So, even though many people don't feel comfortable speaking out the question out loud, but the fact is that we all have the question to one degree or another. Generally, when we're asked to do something that's within our power, we have a good sense of what our abilities are, what our capabilities are. We know pretty much, in terms of our physical strength, we know pretty much what we're capable of. And more or less, when it comes to our intellectual strength, our emotional strength, we have more or less of an idea of what we're capable of. Of course, there are times that we're called upon to reach deeper into ourselves and to tap into deeper strengths, strengths that we're not necessarily consciously aware of. God forbid, in times of tragedy, people are called upon to tap the reserves of emotional strengths that they themselves may not have been conscious of the fact that they even have those strengths, because they haven't really been tested. But still in all, so we can't really say to know exactly what our capacities are and exactly what our capabilities are, because we do have hidden strengths that don't necessarily come to the surface except in certain situations. But the fact is, more or less, we have an idea of what we're capable of. So the biggest problem that most people struggle with is when you turn to me, or the Rebbe turns to me and says to me, you. Yeah, I'm talking to you. You have to do everything in your power to bring Mashiach Tzidkenu B'Peil Mamash. It doesn't feel like the kind of thing that I'm capable of doing. I look at myself and I try to assess what my strengths are, what my capacities are, and I don't really have this feeling like, you know, it's up to me. I'm really going to be the one that's going to make the difference. So that's the issue that everybody struggles with in general, but whether consciously or otherwise. But if we look at some of the other points that the Rebbe makes in the Sikha, some which appear to be even more puzzling, we can perhaps gain a better insight into just what our capacities are or aren't. Just what the Rebbe is asking of us. One of the points that the Rebbe makes is, the Rebbe addresses what the problem is. The Rebbe says there's a problem. What's the problem? The problem is that 10 Jews gathered together. And not only 10 Jews, but many tens of Jews. And they don't make the greatest shturim about the fact that Mashiach has to come. The Rebbe says, this is a problem. 10 Jews gathered together, many tens of Jews. What should they be tumbling about? What should they be storming about that Mashiach has to come? And the Rebbe goes on and the Rebbe says that even when they say Ad Masai, they only say Ad Masai because I told them to, Mipnei HaTzivu. They only say Ad Masai because they were told to say Ad Masai. But if they would really, really want it, the Emes, if they would say Ad Masai the Emes, if they would demand and ask for Mashiach's coming in truth, then Mashiach would have come a long time. So the Rebbe says, what's missing here? What's missing here, the Rebbe says, the problem is that it's done with Pnei HaTzivut. And what's missing here is that it's not the Emes. So the obvious question is, what's so bad about doing it with Pnei HaTzivut? As Hasidim, we know, especially in Chabad Hasidus, the tremendous emphasis on Bittul. The tremendous emphasis on Bittul. So one would think, this is if when a chassid does something, he doesn't do something because he decided that this is what has to be done, this is the right thing. A chassid does what they're told. In fact, there's a story of a certain great rav in England who was not a chassid, he was already an older man, and he came down with leukemia, and Rahman al-Utslan. And he was already very weak, and he was sitting in his house, and he noticed on his shelf that he had a tanya that he was given by Reb Itcher the Masvid. Many years before Reb Itcher the Masvid, before World War II, had been traveling in England to raise money for the yeshivas in Europe. And when he was there, he spent time in the various local yeshivas, one or two that were around at the time, and he made a connection with many of the yeshiva. I mean, obviously it was a small number of people at that time, yeshiva boys in England, so he developed a connection with them, and this person had received a tanya from Reb Itcher the Masvid. And he thought to himself, that's many years later, he's already an older man, and he realized that he never once looked inside. He got a tanya from such a great person, and he never once looked inside. So he decided, he picked up the sefer, and he started learning. Now he had been so weak that he could barely stand. He certainly had trouble walking. And he felt, as he's learning the sefer, he felt physically that his strength is starting to come back. He feels physically strong. And this went on for a while, for a number of times, till it got to the point where he realized something's going on here. And he actually turned on, he had one of his old gramophones, the old record players, and he put on a record, and he started dancing. His wife came in, she thought he had lost his marbles, and she was also shocked because physically he wasn't capable. So he told her what was going on, and he realized that he decided he has to get in touch with the Lubavitchers in England because he wants to find out if the Rebbe today is the same as if the Rebbe is the heir to the throne of the Alter Rebbe, the author of the Tanya. He wants to establish a connection with the Rebbe. So he contacted the Shluchim there, and they established a connection with him and the Rebbe, and it got to the point where he felt that he had to go see the Rebbe, which was a very difficult thing because physically the doctors felt he wasn't able up to it. Finally, they let him go. They let him go, and he came to the Rebbe. He came to the Rebbe, and while he was in Chiddus by the Rebbe, he felt that he was completely cured. Just standing in Chiddus by the Rebbe, he felt that he was completely cured. He said to the Rebbe at that time, he said, said to the Rebbe that I want to be a chassid and I want that my children should be your chassid. So the Rebbe said, not a chassid, but we could work together. You're involved in, he was the head of a school in England. The Rebbe said, not a chassid, but we could work together. So he went out of the Yechidus and he realized that he was completely cured. And he got very, very excited. He started calling people, everyone he knew all around the world, to tell them about the amazing miracle of just walking into Yechidus by the Rebbe. He was completely cured. And he was here, I don't remember what time of the year it was. It was Yom Tov. I think it may have been Shavuos time. Afterwards, at the end of his stay, he went into the Rebbe again and he said to the Rebbe that he wants to be a chassid. So the Rebbe said to him that a chassid is a zelmer. A chassid is a soldier. A soldier has to be ready to do what he's doing. Are you ready for that? Are you ready to be a soldier? In other words, when he first came in, he said he wanted to be a chassid. The Rebbe said to him, listen, we have common goals in terms of spreading Yiddishkeit and strengthening Yiddishkeit. Let's work together. Not a chassid. This time when he came in, the Rebbe said, okay, you want to be a chassid, but you have to know that a chassid is a soldier. It means a chassid follows order. Unfortunately, the story didn't have such a happy ending, because when he told the Rebbe in Yechidus that he had publicized the miracle all over the world, the Rebbe's face got very serious and the Rebbe looked down. The Rebbe said that the second Lucas that were given quietly had a permanence. In other words, he realized that he had made a mistake by publicizing. In other words, that such a miracle was too big to go on public record without it having a negative effect. And he went back to England and he was very involved in Lubavitch work, but a short while later, it came back and he passed away. But the Rebbe said to him, but the thing that the Rebbe established with him is that a chassid is a soldier. That's how the Rebbe defined to him what is a chassid. A chassid, by the way, he was saying that his children and grandchildren, chassid of the Rebbe. But a chassid is a soldier. So what comes to Rebbe, the Rebbe tells us, you know what the problem is? The problem is that when you say Admasai, you say Admasai because you were told to say it. What's so bad about that? A chassid is a soldier. A chassid follows orders. A chassid does what they're told. So the Rebbe says that you should scream at Moshe. So fine, wonderful. People are screaming at Moshe because the Rebbe says. So the Rebbe says, no, that's not good enough. You have to do it with an emes. So what's so bad about doing it because you're told? And what does it mean to do it with an emes? What's that ingredient of emes that's missing? Then there's another part of the Sikha, which is due to my twisted way of looking at things, one of my most favorite parts of the Sikha, which actually never got published, was edited out, which the Rebbe said, I know what's going to happen with this Sikha. What's going to happen with this Sikha is, they're going to write it up, and they're going to publish it. Later it will be put into a volume of other sikhs. The volume will be bound nicely and put on the shelf, and that's where it'll sit. That's what the Rebbe said. He said, I know what's going to happen with the sikha. Don't think that I'm saying the sikha and telling you to do everything in your power and that I've done everything I can and therefore I give it over to you. Don't think I'm saying the sikha under any false illusion. The Rebbe says, I know exactly what's going to happen. They're going to write it up. They're going to publish it. Then it'll be bound into a book, and the book will sit on the shelf. So that seems to be a very negative outlook, a very negative expression on the part of the Rebbe to tell us that, I mean, God forbid, the Rebbe's saying, like, you know, I know pretty much that I'm wasting my breath here. Because I know what's going to happen. So we go from one extreme that the Rebbe says the problem is that when they say Admasai, they say it because they were told to say it, which means that Hasidim do what they're told, which wouldn't seem to be such a bad thing. Then the Rebbe goes to, it says, that I know that what that I'm saying it and nothing's going to happen. I know it's just going to be published and sit on a shelf and nothing's going to happen. So what exactly is going on? So one of the biggest problems that many people have is that people don't really have a very good understanding of what exactly bittul is. We use the term bittul quite a bit. We encounter it very often if we learn chassidus. And everyone talks about bittul. And not too many people are really capable of defining just what is bittul. If you stop the average person on the street and you ask, what is bittul? Does anybody want to say what bittul is? Everyone uses the word, right? Does anybody want to volunteer a definition of bittul?
Subservience.
Okay, subservience is a word. Define it in a, what does it mean in real terms? What does it mean to be a person who has bittul?
Giving up yourself.
What?
Giving up yourself.
I can't hear.
Giving up yourself.
Right. But what does it mean to give up yourself? These are words that we use, and we say these words, self-nullification, and we say words like subservience. But what does it really mean in practical, everyday terms? What does it mean to have it? So the real point where a person does or does not experience bittul is in your consciousness. One of the things that happened when other Rishon and Chava ate from the Eitz HaDaat is that human beings became self-aware. That is the root of all evil. When other Rishon was created, the world, when the Eibishter created the world originally, Ikka Shechina was in Tachtainim. The main revelation of the Shechina was in the physical world, meaning that when Adam Rishon walked in this world, what was he conscious of? What was he aware of? His consciousness, his awareness was filled with the consciousness and awareness of God. He wasn't thinking about himself. That's not what was on his mind. He was not thinking about himself. He was thinking about God. And if he looked at himself, he saw himself only in the context of where he fits into God's plan and to God's will. He did not see himself as something separate, that he's aware of himself as a separate, individual, independent being. I'm sorry? The Chet Eitz HaDaas, that's why in Kabbalah and Chassidus, the Chet Eitz HaDaas is described as something which Adam Rishon did with the highest intentions. He realized that there's a divine plan, and therefore, in order to facilitate that divine plan, he ate from the Eitz HaDaas. Or as it ever brings to many places from the Medrash, it actually was a trick. It was a setup. It was a frame-up. Adam Rishon, at the level Adam Rishon was impossible for him to have son. It's only because God made him do it. It wasn't really a true act of free will on the part of Adam Rishon. But that's a side thought. So, what happened? All of a sudden, human beings became self-aware. I am now aware of myself. Which means, in very simple terms, that our thought processes are always working. Action, sometimes you could be inactive. Speech, sometimes, if you work at it, you could even be silent. But thought is something you can never stop. Your thoughts are always working. Even when you're sleeping, your thoughts are working, but they're not working in a coherent, logical fashion. They're working on an imaginary level. But your thoughts are always working. There's never a time that a person is not thinking. Whether you're thinking analytically, or you're just thinking superficially, or you're just letting your thoughts wander, but your thoughts are always working. And what are your thoughts usually filled with? Yourself. That is, or things that are important to yourself. So what your thoughts, what your consciousness, what your awareness, now besides for the actual content of the thought, you also have a consciousness, an awareness, a sense of being. You're very aware and conscious of yourself. And every decision that you make in life is based on yourself. What do I like? What do I want? What do I think? So everything that we do all centers around self. It's all focused on one thing and one thing only, which is self. So that self-awareness is actually a corruption of true reality. True reality is that the only thing that truly exists is God. The only thing that truly exists is God. So your existence, in so far as you actually have one, because you don't truly have an existence, because if you can't create yourself, you can't really claim to exist on your own, since you did not create yourself. And you're not really an independent entity. You're totally dependent on God for your existence. So the truth is that even your existence is not yours. So since even your existence is not yours, so the fact that your consciousness is preoccupied with self is actually a false, corrupt view of reality. Reality is that the only thing that truly exists is God. And there's nothing else, including self, that truly exists, and certainly does not nothing exists outside of it. So if you perceived reality as it really was, then your perception, your awareness and consciousness would be filled with God. Your awareness and consciousness would be a godly awareness and a godly consciousness. Now, the Rebbe in Shaar Yichud V'Emunah refers to a Zohar, which refers to that the Zohar describes the world of Atzilus as Raza de Mehemenusa. Raza de Mehemenusa, literally translated, means the secret of faith. That's how he describes the world of Atzilus, that the world of Atzilus is the secret of faith. So the Rebbe says, what's the secret of faith? What secret is there? What's the secret, this mysterious faith that the Zohar is alluding to? We know what faith is. What's the secret, mysterious, mystical faith that's only found in the world of Atzilus? So the Rebbe says, how do we understand faith? The way we understand faith is, I know for a fact that I exist. That's a fact. That is not something which comes into question. That is not something which I have any serious doubts about. Although I may want to play existentialist mind games. But the fact is that I don't have any real question about the fact that I exist. My question is, does God exist? I have a question. Does God exist or doesn't he exist? You can't know for sure, right? So you have to rely on faith, because you can't see him, and you can't smell him, and there's no other way to really grasp his existence. So, you have faith. I have faith. I believe in God. The Rebbe says, that's what we call faith. The Rebbe says, that's not real faith. You know what real faith is? The real true faith, but to us this is a deep secret. The real faith is the way it is in the world of Atzilus. There says, you know what it's like in the world of Atzilus? In the world of Atzilus, Atzilus knows that God exists. That's a fact. That's not something which comes with the question. What Atzilus has to struggle with, the fact, is its own existence. Atzilus is not sure if it exists. The fact that God exists, that's obvious in the world of Atzilus. The fact that a world exists is not so obvious. In the world of Atzilus, you have to accept your own existence on faith. It says in the Torah, Bereishis Bara Elokim, I guess something exists. Because the Torah says so. But without the Torah telling me, without faith, I would have no way of knowing. I would have no way of being able to relate to something existing except for God himself. So the Rebbe says, that's the secret, the mystical faith that the Zohar is talking about when he talks about the world of Atzilus, is true faith. True faith is that your entire awareness is filled with the consciousness of God. The question is, so if the only thing that exists is God, so like, where do I fit it? The fact that you exist and you have a role to play, and God has a plan for you, and he wants things from you, that's something you have to take on. So our consciousness, our perception of reality, is totally distorted. And we see and we perceive reality through a dirty lens, which makes it very difficult for us to perceive reality as it actually is. So this consciousness, this self-consciousness, this self-awareness, is something that we have to get rid of. Because that's the root of all evil. There's the Friedrich Rebbe brings that it's brought in Svarim that Rav Pinchas of Karatz, Rav Pinchas Karatz was a disciple of the Baal Shem Tov. And he was a contemporary of the Mezritcher Magid. In fact, it's brought that the Mezritcher Magid sent out the Rebbe to Rav Pinchas Karatz to learn certain things from him. So that the Alter Rebbe was also received certain things from Rav Pinchas Karatz. So it's brought in Svarim that Rav Pinchas Karatz spent 21 years on acquiring the trait of emes, of truth. 7 years he spent on distinguishing truth from falsehood. What's true and what's false? 7 years he spent on uprooting falsehood from himself. And 7 years he spent on acquiring truth. So he devoted 21 years of his life to work specifically on the Mida of Emes. So the Friedrich Rebbe says, this is an unbelievable thing. This is an amazing thing. 21 years, and he worked on acquiring the Mida of Emes. The Friedrich Rebbe says, but the Alter Rebbe gave us a tremendous gift, through which we could bypass that whole process. All those 20 years that Rav Pinchas of Karatz had to work, now the Rebbe gave us a shortcut. He gave us a gift. What is that gift? That gift is called Bittl. That through Bittl, we can bypass that whole process that Rav Pinchas Karatz had to work through for 21 years. What is this Bittl that's so powerful? Because as we explained, that the source of all evil, the source of all falsehood is this false perception that I exist. The question is, does God exist? That's the source of all evil. The fact that there's a world that perceives itself as separate from God. If I could attack that directly, then I don't have to work on each individual area in refining myself as much. I don't have to focus as much on each specific detail, what is true and what is false, and ridding myself of falsehood and acquiring truth. If I go straight to the source of the problem, the source of the problem is my self-consciousness, my self-centeredness. That's the source of the problem. If I can attack the root of the problem, then I can bypass a lot of the struggles in dealing with the symptoms of the problem. So the Friedrich and Ebbets is telling us, how do you bypass? What's that instant bypass that allows you to go straight to the root and the source of the problem? That's good. So what is it? And how do you do it? Bittul is filling your consciousness and awareness with something else besides self. And when your consciousness and awareness and your thought processes are filled and centered around something else besides self, so self takes up less and less space. The more you fill your consciousness and awareness with godly things, the self starts taking up less and less space. And that's actually how Bittul works in Halacha. In Halacha we find it's very similar to the Halachic concept of Bittul.